is going to take us on a journey, but we really need your eyes and your ears and your attention and your love. He was our judge just 2 weeks ago, and he's a good man. He's been a supporter of the show since day one. Please make a feel at home. Give it up for Mr. Mike Cohen. What do you say, folks?
This is called Bank Street. Bank Street runs along the river into the center of town, and it's lined with the most ungodly dives you ever want to see. World-famous pest holes like Lamparelli's Seven Brothers and the Hygienic and the Sub Cafe. Try to imagine a bar that has pictures of atomic submarines hung lovingly on the walls the way other places would put up erotic art or pinups. And there's a row of motorcycles outside. And inside, there's sailors. And of course, I have to explain, this is back when you couldn't, ordinary people didn't have tattoos. You had to be a sailor. And sailors with Popeye arms would sit in the booths next to these pictures of the atomic submarines. And there would be bikers and hippies. And everyone would be in this mellow haze from drinking plum wine that they imported from Japan. And outside would be odd crowds of sailors and tourists and hippies and bikers and sex changes and people who wore yellow pants in public. And I was there because, well, like everything, it starts with a woman, my girlfriend. And she called me up one night and said, I've got to get out of here. And she came over and said her upstairs neighbor had been lurking outside the window of her apartment with a knife and had tried to rape her. And she said, I want to report him. I don't want to put up with this. But she was terrified that her whole sexual history would be revealed in court. So she was like, I want to do this, but I don't. So she moved home and pressed the case. And I didn't live that far away from her, so I moved home too, and I got a job as a cab driver. And I didn't have my license that long before that. And I was in this 1970 Plymouth Satellite Sebring with an automatic transmission, but no synchromesh in first gear. So I had to double clutch like a truck driver. And this thing was like, this is huge wedge-shaped thing, and I'm roaring through traffic like a shark, because the sooner you get there, the better. And driving a cab is a service job, but there wasn't much service in this thing. Poor people would go to the supermarket and they'd call for a cab, and they'd wait and they'd wait. And some guy calls for a cab, and I show up 5 minutes later, and he couldn't believe that I was there for him. He said, you came for someone else. You didn't come for me. And I said, no, I'm here for you. Here, let me help you with your groceries. And he just about fainted. And so I'd go to the supermarket and help people put their groceries in the trunk and carry them out and put them on the porch for them. And they would think they were in a fairy tale or something. And they put me on the old lady detail. Old ladies that had to go to the doctor's office by the hospital. And they always had a bad hip or something. They'd always say, you don't mind if I get in on this side? I've got a bad hip. And I said, no, that's okay. Here, I'll move the car. And they couldn't believe it. So they'd keep calling. They'd ask for me. And when you're young, you think everyone that's older than you is really old. And I had this woman with white hair get in the cab and give me directions to the nursing home. I thought she was checking herself in. It turned out she was going to visit her mother in the nursing home. And because I was young, I thought she was old because she had white hair. And then my girlfriend she kind of said, I can't be here anymore. The case went to trial, the guy got put away. And she said, I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to Mexico for about 6 months. And inside me, a little counter started. And whenever anyone talks about, says, oh, it's been 4 months and 3 weeks and 2 days and blah, 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 I'm always thinking, bullshit. No one keeps track like that. I just had this little atomic clock inside my chest that was sort of counting down to about 6 months from whenever she said, I'll be back in 6 months. And I drove people all day, 10, 12 hours a day. And finally, I got to the end. I just couldn't take it anymore. And I had people get in the cab, and they gave me directions someplace. And I didn't turn the meter on. And they said, mister, you got to turn the meter on. They got all nervous. And I said, no, don't worry. It's free. I'm quitting. And it wasn't until I drove them to the place, and they got out of the cab, and they didn't turn the meter on, that they actually believed that they had gotten a free cab ride. And I just drove back to the garage and turned the cab in and said, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. And I went to school, and all that fall, my life was just, I was just waiting, that little thing in my chest, waiting for her to call or come back or say, I can't live without you. I came back. And the semester ended, and they moved home. And it was dark. It was dark and cold, and I felt so crappy. I went and got the job as a cab driver again, and I would get up at 6 a.m, and I would walk 3 miles along the river, and I'd walk through the bad part of town that had been a slum back during the Civil War and hadn't gotten any better. And I'd walk along the river and over the old iron trestle bridge, past the lagoons where all the boats had sunk and no one had done anything about them, to downtown, to Bank Street. And I'd drive people for 10, 12, 14 hours. Christmas Day, I drove for 14 hours. I kept thinking, who the hell's out on Christmas Day? Why is this one guy going from here to there to there? He must have been the only social butterfly in the whole area, because everyone else was in, but I was the only cab driver on the road, just driving people back and forth. And it was done. And I would walk home down Bank Street, and there was a mobile station. And outside would stand this guy who, back then, we'll call a retard. That's not politically correct. He was developmentally challenged. And he would just stand there. And he would ask you, if you came up to him, he'd say, friend? And I would say to him, yeah, friend. And he'd wave, and I'd walk by. And I didn't know much about developmentally challenged people back then. There was one guy that was on the bus, and his name was Jimmy, and he was an idiot savant. And you could tell him, you could have told him in 1954 that you had a younger brother named Smedley and a blue cow named Alphonse. And if you met him on the bus in 1994, he would look at you and he would say, oh yeah, you've got a brother named Smedley and a blue cow named Alphonse. You know, he just had everything stored away in his head. So I would just say friend to the guy outside the mobile station, and I would disappear into the dark and walk down the freezing railroad tracks. And it was just one of these days like today, dark and cold, just after New Year's, and I just couldn't take driving people around anymore. And I knew, I mean, the clock was still counting away in my chest, and I knew that this woman wasn't coming back from Mexico. And I just couldn't take it anymore. And so I drove the car to the garage at the end of my shift, and I said, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. And I walked through the dark down Bank Street, past all the dives and the bars. And I got to the mobile station, and that challenged man was standing there, and he saw me, and his eyes lit up, and he said, friend. And I was feeling so bad I didn't say anything to him, and he said, friend, friend, friend. And I just walked off into the darkness down the railroad tracks, hearing him calling after me, friend, friend. Bank Street.